Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's time! With Bruce Buffer. And now, it's time for the voice of mixed martial arts.
We are live!
It's Bruce Buffer.
Bruce Buffer.
It's time.
From the shores of Malibu, where the waves are pumping, to the Great Wall of China, and back to the streets of Abu Dhabi Fight Island, where the UFC is coming. We are live. This is It's Time Radio, the show we talk about what you think about but may be afraid to voice. Do not worry. We will voice it for you. We talk about everything, and we have a lot to talk about today. Calling Trump, politics, all the things going on. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, film, TV, UFC. But this show is going to focus on some very important topics today. And we have to start off the show with first, let me say hi, TJ. How are you?
I'm great, Buff. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, my friend. Happy New Year. I'm just disgusted that our first show of the new year, we have to talk about. President Roosevelt said on December 7th in 1942 that it was a date that will live in infamy, right? January 6th, 2021 is also a date that will live in infamy. This is the worst day, I think, one of the worst days in the history of our country. Since December 7th, since I just 9/11,
yeah,
which was the last worst day. This is horrific. I am absolutely pissed off. I'm upset. I'm hurt. I don't know how to describe it. I can't even put it into words. TJ, what I watched yesterday with what happened and the reaction from our president of the United States, which was nothing, is one of the most disgusting displays I've ever seen in my life. Am I off or am I on?
I think you're pretty spot on here, Bruce. When you look at things like this, it's not uncommon to have a government proceeding kind of stormed like this worldwide, globally. But in the United States, we don't do things like that. We don't allow things like that to happen. And what really bothered me was online, people cheering for this, Bruce. People egging it on, and it doesn't matter what side of the fence you're on. What happened yesterday, no one can support that. And if you do, I don't know what to say for you, because your political views are clouding the difference between right and wrong in a lot of ways.
Well, this was a premeditated action.
Yeah.
It was an action that was partially instigated by the president of the United States.
It definitely wasn't stopped by him, I'll say that.
He didn't do anything. He didn't do a single thing. As a matter of fact, reports are coming through that President Trump and White House officials did very little to even check in on Vice President Mike Pence while he and members of his family are inside the U.S. Capitol when the Trump-backed rioters stormed the halls of Congress on Wednesday. TJ, if you think back to when the Black Lives Matter protests happened, peaceful protests that took place in Washington, D.C., where they received tear gas and police interference so Trump could go across to take a photo op. Remember when that happened?
Right, with the Bible, yep.
Right, and here yesterday when there's questions now, people are calling for the resignation of the Washington, D.C. police chief. So far, cabinet members, one of the Trump cabinet members has resigned. The House Speaker has called for resignation of the Washington State police chief. Other incidents are happening. Many Republicans, President Trump's party, are voicing things to the fact of, like, I just can't take it anymore, you know, along with the ones that are standing beside him. But the fact of the matter is, it's just like he hasn't said a single word about COVID in right. Over a month.
Yeah.
What has he said about this?
I mean, in a way, he supported the people that were there and also said, like, these things happen when you take away an election from someone. I think he said it like a landslide victory. The issue that I have with all of this is people fail to realize that the decisions that are made today inform decisions and sort of protocol on what will happen in the future. I'm a big precedent guy, not president guy, precedent guy. And you set the precedent for how things are going to be handled. And when you don't condemn things like this and say this is wrong, you leave the door open for something like this to happen in the future. And I feel like there's two sides to this in the sense that it's a very big deal. We can't tolerate this, but there's a lot of hyperbole as well where, I mean, I saw people saying that the people that stormed the Senate floor should, you know, be hung for treason. And it's like, it's a little far. But at the same time, like, you need to clap down on this in a way where it sends a clear message so it doesn't happen again. I don't know what that decision necessarily is, but something needs to be done, whether it's by the president or someone else of supreme authority that stops this from happening in the future.
What will be done, or what could be done today, is the enaction of the 25th Amendment, which is very difficult to enact.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen, but they're talking about it. You have the other situation yesterday where if this was during the BLM protests, with all the show of force of military and everybody that was surrounding the White House at that time, what do you think would have happened if anybody stormed the White House that day?
Well, my belief is this. When you have citizens storming a Capitol, that's when you call the National Guard, is it not? That's when you use force.
That's right. But what happened is that Trump did not even call the National Guard. The National Guard was initiated by Biden, by Vice President Biden. Vice President Mike Pence.
So he called it in. I didn't even know that he had the authority to do so.
I read where he's the one that initiated it. Again, I'm going to look for more details.
Bruce, we'll surprise me, but that kind of goes to the level of just insanity that this story is, right? Like, how is this not met with the most force you could think of by our government? Because you have a government proceeding, a very important one. Granted, it's more or less a formality than anything, but still, it was disrupted by civil unrest, and it was up to some police officers to handle?
Civil unrest with many that have been identified and are being arrested, and I hope they arrest and throw the book at all of them and set an example. All of them, okay? Many of the people they arrested, only one was, if I read correctly, only one was a citizen of Washington, D.C. These are people that traveled
right
to Washington,
well,
D.C.
Well, I mean, there was a protest. That was organized.
They have the right to protest. They have the right to protest.
100%. But the bottom line is it's the same thing that was going back to, you know, this summer. Is like you and I said on this show multiple times, we're all for protesting. But please do not burn down the city. Please do not harm people. Please do not instigate violence on both sides, whether it be the police that are defending and trying to hold back the barricade and the people that are also meeting them there and speaking their mind. You have no right to storm the Senate floor. I don't care who you are. You don't have the right to do it.
And tragically, one person was shot, three are dead from serious injuries that died at the hospital, is the report that came in. They're so lucky that not more were shot.
Shots were fired over a protest, Bruce.
I'm of the attitude that if I'm a government, the House of Congress, the Capitol building, the White House, whatever, you storm that building, you break in a window, you're shot.
I mean, in other countries, for sure. That's something that I think a lot of people don't really realize, you know, how this would be handled in another country.
It would be handled. We'll talk about more about this because we have our COVID specialist, Dr. Jeff Davidson, coming on the show. But I want to address this more as we continue. Oh, he's asking what your ID is.
He's here, Bruce. He's in the room. Okay, so great. Why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back with a good doc.
Let's take a quick break and back with a good doctor. And we need to address this more when we come back.
100%.
It's time to begin. Who am I kidding? I'll let him do it. Now, back to the voice of MMA, Bruce Buffer.
And we're back, and we're back with Dr. Jeff Davison, the doctor to the stars, the doctor to the star fighters, the doctor to the NFL, the doctor to the UFC, the doctor to emergency hospital in Vegas, the doctor to God knows how many other people. Let's face it, he's a doctor. And we're going to talk to him about COVID-19 and updates and what's going on. And he's going to share with this show. And we're going to continue our conversation on the horrific activities that happened yesterday in our state's, our country's capital. Let's start off. Do we have any good news? But let's start off with news. Hi, Doc. How are you?
Hey, good morning to all you guys. Good morning, TJ. And good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. Good morning. We were just discussing the horrific things that happened yesterday, Doc. We'll go into it a little more. I'm sure you're as disgusted as we are. But I want to get right to the meat of why I want to have you on. We had you on, I think, early December, last November, during the COVID-19 pandemic, which is doing nothing but raging further and higher and more dangerous than ever. With everything going on, and back then you were like, well, things are okay in Vegas or so. And then I talked to you a few weeks later. Vegas is on fire. Reno's on fire. You're in the front lines. You're dealing with this. Tell us the current state in your mind of where we're at. And also, I understand you got vaccinated, and I would like to know about that, your opinion on that.
Well, first of all, good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me back. It's always great to be on with you, Bruce, and with you, TJ, directing us from the background there and telling us when we're working and when we're not working. So it was great. All the Wi-Fis were up and running. Yeah, so what's the state of COVID-19? Well, the state, unfortunately, is it's very active. You know, Nevada, like probably many other states, is in the midst of what? Second wave, third wave, fourth wave. I'm not even sure what wave. I'm just going to tell you it's very, very full. Most all the hospitals in Nevada, in Las Vegas particularly, are to capacity. Now, we have many COVID patients that have come in with, you know, more moderate and severe disease that are now spending time in the hospital, which then creates a little bit of a, you know, a capacity issue for all the other illnesses that we genuinely take care of in addition to COVID-19. So I imagine that what Las Vegas is going through is no different than California and many other states. That's the bad news. The other bad news is, you know, everyone's talked about these mutant strains. The reality of this is the coronavirus virus, which has four different genera, alpha, beta, and two others, typically or routinely mutates every 2 weeks. And those mutations come and go and typically don't cause any issue. And the vaccines that we develop typically cover those very small mutations. It takes really genuinely big variations that catch on in large populations to create a mutant or escape strain that then becomes resistant to the vaccination process that we might be in the midst of. So good news is the vaccines are out. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines came out, as everyone knows, about a month ago, just about the second, third week of December. I completed both the first and the second vaccination. Yes, I'm here to tell you, it was not a horrible process. I did have some soreness in the arm where the vaccine was. But I was, I guess, maybe one of the lucky ones, had very few, in fact, no other symptoms at all. I have spoken with colleagues and they have developed, you know, everything from the sore arm to some mild kind of disease-like symptoms, whether that be a mild headache, mild fever and chill, mild body ache, or nothing. Most of it's brief. And most of that means that, guess what? The vaccine worked.
All right. So with that being said, do you recommend that given the chance, us as citizens after the frontliners, the elderly that are so in dire need of it, do you recommend everybody gets the vaccine, Doc?
Yes. Listen, I think that for us to beat this virus and to develop the, quote, herd immunity, the you know, the words we're all looking for, some of that's going to be people get the native illness and get over it and do well. And that is going to be a natural way to develop an immunity. But the only way to get over this quicker is for all of us to vaccinate. And therein lies some of the discussion. Can we get the distribution out quickly? What's the process from the most susceptible to maybe the most healthy people that maybe can wait the longest? And none of these are good answers, but unfortunately there has to be a distribution process. I do think there's probably plenty of vaccine. I also think it's very difficult to distribute it. And I don't have an answer for that part of it, Bruce.
Yeah, part of the difficulty is the Pfizer needs the sub-freezers, the special freezer, where the Moderna vaccine, you don't need that. They're both a two-step process. Obviously, an issue, and there's nothing we can do about it now, falls with their leadership, President Trump, and the way that the CDC and everybody handled this. It should have been handled much differently. Again, we can go back and complain about that all day long. The reality is we're in the situation we're in. So whatever it takes to get the vaccine, I know the rich and famous, there's rumors, you know, they're paying whatever they can to get ahead of the, you know, everybody in line. That's a natural thing that'll happen in any similar situation that's going to take place. But the bottom line is we all need it. And you made a comment to me a couple weeks ago where you said that 2021 is going to be the year of the V or the V. Can you please explain what you meant by that?
Well, I don't want to put the fear or the scare into everyone, but I do think in 2021, people will make decisions. And but I do think you're either going to get the virus itself or you're going to get the vaccine. I don't think at the end of 2021, there will be a large group of people that don't get either. You know, the virus has mutated into this new strain, the B117 strain that you initially said was only in the UK. Now there's greater than 60 cases reported in the US that started in Colorado, now in California. So there are some mutations. And in the quote definition of the, one of the mutations that's out that we're all talking about is that it has a higher transmissibility. So it's even quicker transmit. The other thing they talked about is it's even quicker to transmit amongst younger people. So that will cause even a greater spread. So I just believe if we want to get back to some normalcy of life, and that means work and school and entertainment and sports and all the things that we all enjoy, you're probably going to need to get one or the other. And I'd prefer when to be vaccinated.
I know. And I was told originally when they started laying these out, how I was going to roll out, that as a citizen or as an individual like myself, maybe not till March. Now they're saying possibly not till June, even fall. Because it's still got to be, they've got to get this thing together. And, you know,
Bruce, I respect and understand what you're saying because I've heard those same things too. But I also hear in the same breath, these people are downplaying what is going to be our new normal moving forward. Like, I've heard that my son may not be able to get a vaccine here in the state of California until fall. But I also heard Gavin Newsom talk about schools possibly opening up in February. And it's like, what? Like, I thought we were waiting for the vaccine. Like, why would we, you know, have a clear timeline to where we can dispense this vaccine to kids, but then force them back into school environment in February?
You know, it's tough. I mean, we'll have to deal with whatever comes about. There's no positive thoughts about it whatsoever. It's just about what happens. And every day is a new day.
Right.
Every day we're learning stuff new. As a matter of fact, you know, doctor, the after effects of the vaccine, you know, people are questioning what could be the after effects. We don't know until they happen. The after effects of COVID, my friends that have had it, one of my friends in particular, very active woman, very active all the time. Now she's almost narcoleptic. She hit 9 o'clock hit. She can't, you know, she's falling asleep. This has been going on for weeks. Pleurisy in her lungs and her heart. Is that going to be forever? Is that going to be for 2 months? Is that going to, nobody knows. Am I wrong in that? We're learning as we go. And that's just,
I think you're right. Yeah. Listen, Bruce, I think you're right. Listen, look how much more we know today than we knew when this all started in January, February, March of 2020. We have a greater care. We have a greater understanding of the transmission. We have a greater understanding of how to prevent. And actually, even as of today, I've been discussing even some more preventative medications or supplements that are being discussed amongst the medical community. So I think, Bruce, you hit it right on that we're going to continue to learn and we're going to continue to improve our outcome. But it will probably take most of 2021 to either vaccinate those that wish to be vaccinated or those that don't may, unfortunately, get the actual virus. Hopefully they all do well. I guess the next question that we're all going to ask is, well, how long is the immunity, both from the natural infection and then both from the immunization itself, the vaccination process?
Do we know, doctor? Is there a clear timeline of what that immunity is when your body is most resistant? What is the window on that?
I've heard three months to 6 months. 3 months seems to be the popular thing, but that you can get it afterwards. The immunity, I'm not a doctor.
Dr. Buffer over here.
Yeah, Dr. Buffer.
No, listen, Dr. Buffer is pretty darn on it. I mean, I think, we're all reading the same, literature. So I don't think Bruce is far off. You know, listen, right now the CDC does state in its updates that if you've had the illness, and it does depend on the severity of the illness. So we do think the higher the severity, the more antibody you would produce. And that would make sense, right? If you have a very mild or asymptomatic case, you may not produce as much antibody response within yourself. And if you have a much more severe or critical case, we would expect to have much more antibody produced. But Bruce is right. CDC says for 90 days after an illness, you probably don't have to test because you probably have developed enough antibody and immunity to get through that time frame. Thereafter, no one really knows yet what is the rate of decrease, if there is a decrease in antibody. We suspect there is. The next question is, we just finished vaccinating myself and you know, hopefully millions more Americans will continue this process. What's the length and level of antibody we will develop? You know, we read the reports that said you'll have up to 95% efficacy of not getting the virus. But that doesn't mean a couple of things. Number one, you can still catch the virus and then transmit it to someone else that hasn't been vaccinated.
Right.
You could still get a severe case, although it's a 95% confidence you should not. And we don't know when you get the vaccine, is this going to be an immunity that lasts for 2 years or 5 years and maybe just needs a booster every year? Or is this something that we're going to do yearly? Will the vaccine kind of change a little bit yearly like the flu vaccine does? These are all great questions. And we're going to have more shows to go over in the future because I don't have the answers today.
I love how many times you've, I think this is the fourth time you've been on the show, Doc, and I learned something new every time. And I think that goes to sort of prove the point that this is still an evolving and changing story and we get more and more information. But as that is said, as we know more, I still feel like people are getting more and more numb to the idea that we're in a pandemic. Like, we understand the numbers are at an all-time high, but I think that there's like an exhaustion level with just, you know, the safeguards that we have to take. And I think especially here in California, where the weather is, you know, always nice for the most part, people are just pushing that envelope because they're just sick of it. And I think being sick of it is ultimately why a lot of people are getting sick in the end.
Well, they're also letting their guard down because they're getting sick of it. You know, at times there's many different instances that can cause a situation. You've got, you know, people not wearing masks still and out there like crazy. Doc, you know that my friend Chuck Zito that comes to the UFCs, are you familiar with him?
I'm familiar with Chuck.
Okay, Chuck just put out his Instagram yesterday. He's been preaching, you know, he's very much a pro-Trump. I'm not going to get into that. Chuck's a good guy, you know, like a brother to me. But he showed himself a picture in the hospital with, you know, the whole thing on, the respirator, the whole bit, and basically saying that he hasn't been on Instagram for 12 days because he has COVID, and wow. He's where he openly did not wear masks anywhere. And now he's saying, wear your mask. This is real. In so many words, wear your mask, which seems to be a situation that's happening. But you brought up something that concerns me. My question I was going to ask you today is that if somebody like a friend of mine, or I have, let me go into another situation. I have a friend who dates this girl, right? She got COVID. And they have not seen each other now for like 4 weeks. Okay. You told me after 10, 14 days from the point of symptoms and everything, once 48 hours of symptoms are over, but usually the term is 10 to 14 days, you're safe. Your COVID's out, your antibodies are in, whatever. In the workplace where his friend works, she's, you know, meets different people. So now she has immunity personified, right? Because she had a pretty serious case of COVID. Okay. And suffering from pleurisy in the lungs and stuff, I was told, you know, having issues and stuff like that. So now he wants to see her. She's past the point of infection, but she's out there doing her job. So she has immunities. If she comes up against somebody who touches her with COVID, breathes on her with COVID, what should he do? I mean, before she sees him, should she make sure she showers and clean and change her clothes? And will that permit any transmission? Or can the virus get in somebody that has had it, has immunity to where he can see her and then she transmits it to him, even though she has immunities in her body? Do you understand my question?
I do. And that is such a complexity, but let me try and break it down to some really basic parts. So, you know, we do say that, or we do think that once someone has become COVID positive and after 10 days, their symptoms have resolved. And we all talk about that 24 hour on the 10th day where no symptoms without any fever reducing medication or other medication. We do say that your safe, we feel, by the current guidelines to go back out into the school environment and the work environment, et cetera. Now, what we found in some institutions where we continue to test, Bruce, obviously in the UFC, you know that, some people continue to test positive for weeks, if not months. And what we all have learned so far, what we think, is that a kind of a dead virus or some particles of virus or skeleton bones of the virus are still being shed, but are no longer contagious after this 10th day. So that's that part of it. The second part of it is that individual would presume to have had some antibody now. They would have developed some antibodies because they had the illness. So you would say, well, they're protected. The third part of that question then becomes, can that individual be exposed, basically contract the illness again, not know it, because now they have antibodies, and then possibly be a spreader to someone else? I think the answer to that is yes. And I think the answer is because it's no different than a vaccinated individual. So I'll use myself as an example. I finished my two-part vaccination series. After 7 days of the second vaccination, I should be up to this 95%, and I have a pretty good antibody level. That doesn't mean I can let my guard down, because I still got to protect my girlfriend, my kids, people around me, my friends like you, my patients. So unfortunately, mask fatigue can't happen. We got to continue to be cautious until everyone's had the vaccine, the virus, or both. And that's where I want to hopefully get us in 2021.
I've got a bunch of questions. If you don't mind, I'd just like to ask one question. Go ahead, Bruce.
I just had one based on the one question I asked previous. So what I told him I was going to ask you this. So what do I tell him? I mean, could he see his girlfriend like normal?
You know, what I tell him is I think everyone has to use their common sense. If she is working, but using all of the social responsibilities that we're all discussing every day now, like you just said, you do wear your mask, even though you have mask fatigue. You do wash your hands, I don't know how many times a day, even though you don't want to, because your skin is dry and chapped. If you use all of these social responsibilities, then by our guidelines in 2021 now, we are doing the best we can to prevent a reinfection or a primary infection. And it's no different than, like, I come home to my family. You know, I think I've been very safe all day. I'm not going to not see my family members that are around me. I'm going to be around them because I feel confident that I've done the best thing I can do to be preventative during the day.
Gotcha. So it's just, we'll get back to the same thing, Doc. It's about practicing safety and protocol.
I hate to say it, but that's the baseline. You're correct.
Yeah. And the one last thing I want to mention before TJ, go ahead and ask your questions. We all remember Gilligan's Island.
Yeah.
Of course.
Remember Marianne?
Yep. I heard this.
Yes, we heard. I heard.
She died. She died of COVID. Yeah.
And you remember the famous question, Bruce?
The famous what? Crush?
Question.
Yeah. Marianne or Ginger?
Thank you.
That's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here for, Doc.
I was kind of a ginger guy when I was a kid, but definitely Marianne as a second date would be great.
There you go.
Anyway, God bless her, and all my condolences to her family. You know, it's not about being famous and suffering from the disease. We are all created equal. It's just somebody we all knew. That's all.
Well,
I'm saying.
You know, it kind of is to a certain extent for the greater understanding of COVID and the severity of it. It is about famous people and celebrities, because it tends to impact, you know, people that are a lot more numb to this in general. And this is one thing I saw yesterday. Dr. Dre had a brain aneurysm.
Yeah.
And, you know, ICU beds are very rare. They're scarce here at this point. And I saw people online like going, is he going to be able to be treated? And that was one thing that I kind of thought broke through the guard of a lot of people that don't seem to really care too much about, you know, the state of our, you know, hospital occupancy here in Southern California. But that was one thing that made people go, wait, I know this isn't COVID related, but in a roundabout way it is he going to be able to get the medical care that he needs? And Bruce, I understand what you're saying. We're all created equal. We all need, you know, to be in the same hierarchy for vaccines and things like that. But famous people, when they're affected, make people think. And I think that is vital, especially when we talk about the mask fatigue and the safety and protocol. People are just sick of it for the most part. One thing I wanted to ask.
You forgot about one thing. While he was in the hospital, his house got robbed.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they totally vandalized his house and robbed him.
What is wrong with people?
They're assholes.
Seriously?
There's many assholes out there, yeah.
My God. All right. First question. we've talked a lot about the test, Doc, and I know that maybe this isn't the right vernacular for it, but I believe people have a viral load when they have the illness. It's you know, how much they're impacted in their blood. Like when you get tested for COVID, is it a is there a threshold? Like, can you have a certain amount of COVID virus that doesn't mean you're necessarily positive, or does the test show positive for any sign of the illness?
So another great question. You know, the PCR test, which is the nucleic acid test, is a little bit to be more sensitive and quote the gold standard as compared to the rapid antigen test. And the difference being that in the PCR, which is the polymerase chain reaction, and then RT, which means reverse transcriptase testing, they'll take a swab from either the oral pharynx or the nasal pharynx. And really what that analyzer and process does is it takes that viral particle and it amplifies it to a level of which the analyzer can then identify this as a positive or negative. And when I mean amplify it, I mean amplify it. So, you know, one of the reasons for that is, number one, so that we have this giant no miss, right? In the beginning, testing was, we don't want to miss any cases. So you needed this really big net to catch everything. There has been a lot of discussion on, are we over-testing or are tests capturing too much, where maybe these individuals don't have these high viral loads, or maybe like it's beyond 10 days and why is it still testing positive? But the answer was, in the beginning, you know, these are very sensitive tests. They were meant to be very good screening tests and they were meant not to miss anything. So, you know, you have to balance that where we are in 2021 with 2020. The rapid antigen test, a little bit less reliable as far as duration. So prior to the illness or after about day 7 or 8, as people say, the rapid antigen is not as reliable. But for those first 7 days of illness, it's very good. And that's the quote 15-minute test that a lot of people get or use in part of a algorithm of testing. So, you know, many of the sports that have come back in action here in late 2020 or 2021, you know, most of those athletes or personnel around the athletes have PCR testing, but then later in the week or the event kind of moves forward, may just do what's called surveillance testing. And that's more of the rapid antigen, because that very first PCR test is a very sensitive and a very broad test. And if you get through that as a negative, it's a very good insight that this individual is clear of COVID at this time.
Right. Okay. That's good to know. Another question. I've been to Mexico a few times throughout this pandemic, and I've actually traveled with some people that had COVID prior to going down there. They recovered and were clear. But when they were down there, Doc, they bought the malaria medication, hydroxychloroquine, because in Mexico, prescriptions and antibiotics and things like that you can buy over the counter. These same people are kind of hesitant to take the vaccine, but they're willing to go take medicine, which is mind-boggling to me for a variety of reasons. But can I get you to just comment on the idea that hydroxychloroquine, a medication that, to my knowledge, doesn't really do anything against COVID, is it something people should be taking?
Well, listen, I, education is great. And you know, maybe a year ago, I might have said hydroxychloroquine is a medication that has some promise. I would probably say most of that use has burned out, and there's pretty minimal data and very few people that would support taking hydroxychloroquine anymore. I thought you were going to ask me about some other medications that have really come on the horizon, like ivermectin and some other medications that have showed some promise. You know what I would say is there's a couple of different pools of people. There are those people that have been exposed and are now in what's called a high-risk category because, like, you had a high-risk exposure. And what can they take to prevent, you know, getting the actual virus, if there is such a thing? And then there's that group of people that have already had the virus. They come home, and they're like, well, they're now home. What can they take to stay safe? So I'm just going to kind of read off a protocol that I'm looking at. And this is one that's been a little bit accepted, and this is out there by a critical care alliance group. And it's kind of interesting. Many of these, I think you already know. Most people will say in a preventative measure, prophylaxis, take vitamin C, right? Most people are saying take about 1,000 milligrams a day. Take vitamin D, take about 1,000 to maybe 3,000 international units a day. Zinc, we're all taking zinc because we all know zinc's important in our protein. And it does have some antibacterial and antiviral properties. And I think that's great. The dosing's not clear. Most people say, well, I'll just take 10 or 20 milligrams a day. You can actually take up to 50 milligrams a day. And then melatonin. And a lot of people say, well, wait a minute, doc, I take that to sleep. Melatonin has also been proposed as having some properties that will assist in this preventative. And they're saying take anywhere from 5 to 10 milligrams. I tell people just to take, based on their weight, 5 or 10 milligrams before they go to sleep at night, because of course, melatonin can cause some drowsiness. Now, some of the other medicine is called quercetin. And it's one of the ones that's kind of out there now. And it's one of those ones being investigated as far as, can it help? And the answer is a lot of people are promoting it. And I'll let people look it up and do their own reading, but it's spelled Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. And it is definitely one of those supplements that many people are now promoting as it could be beneficial. The ivermectin is one of those medications that we came across that we've already been using in the past in a different treatment. And now it seems to have some crossover, like we've learned with remdesivir, which was initially used for other antiviral property, to have some promise in this COVID-19 treatment. So again, education is great. We're moving forward. We're learning more and more. My hope is we all get vaccinated in this year, and there are less and less people that will have to follow these preventative or post-treatment protocols.
Final question for me, Doc, if you don't mind, and Buff, I'll let you have your show back. Sorry, but I'm curious.
Your show too.
We've talked a lot about mutation, and maybe this is an obvious sort of question, but I'm curious. You know, every virus evolves to some point. And from my understanding, there's always a purpose for a virus to evolve. Yeah. You know, obviously, if we're vaccinating against something, that virus wants to keep thriving. So it changes its structure and whatnot. But when you look at COVID, is there anything that is unique to these mutations? And can you see, is there any rhyme or reason to what sort of mutations it's going through and what the point of this evolution process is for it? Is it becoming more deadly? Is it becoming more of a problem? Or is it more just it's trying to stay one step ahead of the people that are combating it?
You nailed it. So it's just a virus. Viruses don't think, they don't really have any existence without having a host.
Right.
And so they mutate, they change so that they can continue to become transmissible. And that's what we're all seeing with these genome changes that are very, so far, not too significant. There's been some mutations and we call them escape mutations. Listen, it's the battle, right? The good and the bad. We're staying one step ahead with vaccine and with medication technology. The virus evolves because it wants to continue to be transmissible. You know, what's going on in the UK and specifically Britain is really interesting. And I touched on this in a meeting I was just in. They're now considering either changing the dosing regimens completely of the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine, saying, well, could we give a half a dose so that we could get more people vaccinated right, even quicker? Or could we do one dose and then wait even longer, up to 12 weeks? And the answer to that is that's not how any of the trials were conducted.
Right.
So we don't have any data to say any of that would work. You know, and in an immunologist and epidemiologist world, they would say that's the worst thing we could do. Now you're giving the virus all kinds of opportunity to mutate and find a way around the vaccine. You know, we all get vaccinated, we create these antibodies. What we don't want to happen is for the virus to find a way around that antibody and change so that we get sick anyway, because then we're back to square one.
Exactly. All that does to me, it makes me think about is you're providing a false peace of mind to the American public, but you're not taking care of the problem, right? You're lessening, you're cutting yourself in half, which to me just creates a whole nother slew of potential issues that you'd have to deal with. So stick to the gun, stick to the trial. Look, these vaccines were rolled out so fast. And if you investigate the history of Moderna and Pfizer, you know, one of the things you see, which I'm not saying anything, but I'm going to tell you right now, they have paid hundreds of millions of dollars in legal lawsuits and fines for fraudulent advertising, for you know, all these different things.
That's every pharmaceutical company.
Pharmaceutical company. So if the trial is a trial and it says, this is the trial, this is the way we just stick to what it is. Let's just concentrate on making as many of these things. And hopefully our leaders will get this thing rolled out the way it should. And they have not done a good job. And hopefully it'll get better. We're living in a state of hope. You know,
well, let me say this about the messenger RNA. So, you know, January 10th of 2020, the Chinese researchers posted the novel coronavirus RNA sequence on a preprint server. January 10th. So literally 3 days from now, a year ago,
wow,
we knew the sequence, right? Scientists in this country and other countries already have what's called genetic platforms that could rapidly review the RNA sequence. And literally the first U.S. clinical trials for vaccines began 66 days later after January 10th. That's how quickly this technology of this genetic platform was able to advance this over the old traditional platforms of protein-based vaccines, where whatever the organism was, it had to be grown in either an animal cell or a chicken egg. It could have taken months. And then it had to be extracted, it had to be killed or weakened, that's what we call attenuated. Then it had to be purified, it had to undergo extensive testing. And that did take years. And that was the difference between this current technology and what was called protein-based technology. And protein-based technology vaccines are out there all over. That's what polio and that's what the flu are. That's what the hepatitis B and the human papillomavirus virus vaccines are all produced as. But this new messenger RNA technology, or this new genome platform technology, is outstanding. The difference is, and the one thing we don't know, is the stability of these vaccines. Mm. And the first thing that you all know just by looking at it is, well, there must be something that's unstable, because if we don't keep it refrigerated at these incredibly cold temperatures, this messenger RNA vaccine breaks apart, becomes basically inactive and doesn't help us. So there is something to that. And I do think, and as I read and learn, that's why you get two doses. You know, the first dose of this messenger RNA that you get, it presents to your body uptakes it, it produces this spike-like antigen protein, which is the one that we're also worried about, the S protein, and you produce an antibody to that. But the problem is these messenger RNA vaccines don't last long. So your body doesn't get a lot of time to recognize this foreign protein and make a really big, robust response against it. And so we're worried that maybe the B cells and the T cells, which are part of your immune system, may forget what they just saw. Thus, we give this second dose 20, 25, 30 days later, and we kind of, restart that whole machinery again, and we build this memory into our system. And that really is how these trials were based. I've heard a lot of people say, well, why don't we just give bigger doses? Well, that answer is kind of simple. You know, they had to find a dose that created a vaccine and an immune response, but didn't create a lot of adverse effects. No one wants a Bell's palsy. No one wants to have a horrible illness because they got vaccinated.
Right.
No one wants to have an anaphylactic reaction. So, it's a significant balance. What's the safest dose to give? What's the frequency to give it? With what we all hope is the longest response of your body remembering what it saw.
So basically what you're saying, in the battle of the V against the V, we all have a puncher's chance. That's what you're saying.
Really, Buff? Come on.
Well, that's what he's saying. It's like there's no definitive thing here. We're out there fighting. You know, we're hoping that we just survive this whole thing.
If people are listening, they think that I'm an a-hole for saying we don't have a puncher's chance. But people that are watching with that bottle, that beautiful bottle of your bourbon on the screen, they know what I'm talking about. Cheap plug, but I like it.
Thank you. But which the doctor has tried puncher's chance, right?
Oh,
I have.
Give us the review, doctor. Are you a bourbon drinker in general?
I'm not. I'm more of a wine drinker, but I will tell you the puncher's chance on ice on a nice evening is very good.
Nice.
Very good. So,
especially after the long days you have, doc, I think you ought to throw yourself like three fingers of puncher's chance, if you know what I'm saying. Jeez.
I got to wake up the next morning and start all over.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah. We don't want to interfere with your ability of hand to eye coordination. Right.
There,
so
go.
All good.
How's your fatigue level, doc? We talk about people not wanting to do all the safety protocol, the masking. I mean, you're on the front lines fighting this. You've got to be worn down a bit. How do you stay so, optimistic and energized?
I think Bruce knows I go to bed extremely late and get up extremely early. And I've always been fortunate to have a pretty good optimistic look at everything. But I will be very honest with you. I have probably as much mask fatigue as everyone. I was a little saddened, you know, at the way our sports world has become in the last year. And I hope to get, you know, audiences and fans back out there screaming, yelling, enjoying themselves. And I really hope just to be able to enjoy things like family and friends again without wearing masks. So, you know, do I have mask fatigue? Absolutely. You know, the difference is in my line of work at the hospital, you don't have an option. The moment you're walking in the door, you're having your temperature taken. You're being asked all the questions if you're healthy or not, and you're not even allowed in the door without the mask. So, you know, it's more of a common optic in my line of work. But I got to be honest with you, at the gym, everywhere else, I'm as much as any of you wanting to take that mask off so I can just see the facial expressions I miss, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, you don't realize how social we are until we're not allowed to be social.
Right.
And I've definitely felt that. One thing I just do want to say, I know you got to get going, Doc, but, you know, on behalf of fight fans everywhere and people like Bruce and I who work in this sport, thank you for everything that you have done in fighting this and getting the UFC to where it is today, because they really have been the leader with safety and protocol and showing, you know, what sports can be like when you take the right steps. And, you know, I think we're very lucky to have a sport like this that is an individual sport. So you can, you know, circumvent a lot of the postponements that we've seen, you know, with like college football and a lot of, you know, questions of rule changes just to get a season in and get the right teams playing the right teams. But with combat sports, we really didn't miss a beat, guys. And that's one thing that I think myself and my family, for that matter, you know, as someone who, you know, commands a paycheck in this sport, man, I'd be lost without MMA. And you're a big reason that we've been able to continue forward with it.
Well, listen, in all fairness, you know, Dana White, who never loses the vision, and Bruce will tell you, said, we're going to continue to have sport. I mean, we obviously all took off last March because we had to kind of, I'll say, you know, reboot and recheck and get set. But really, Dana had the vision and said, we'll find a way. And I mean, he really just challenged us all, whether it was the medical team, the legal team, the coaches, the referees, you know, Bruce, whoever, to just say, we're going to continue. So let's figure it out. And, you know, compliments to the people that have the vision to say, I'm not afraid. You really got to have leaders like that. And he did a great job. And I think, like you said, that showed that other sports, whether they were team oriented or individually oriented, could also find a way. I mean, who did you think we were going to get through the NFL season? I mean,
seriously.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Did you think you were going to have an Alabama versus Ohio in 4 days? Who knows?
Well, with that being said, we're going to sign off here in a minute or so, Doc. We're going to Abu Dhabi. Are you going to Abu Dhabi?
This is the last one I will not attend, because now that I'm vaccinated, I think the kind of the guidelines of the international travel will not be so strict with me, and I'll be able to come back into Las Vegas and go to the hospital and do all the other things. So this one I will be watching you guys on the UFC Fight Pass, as I hope you will do well, and I'll be watching.
Very cool. I noticed a little increase, it seems, in the safety and protocol we're going to go through this trip. A little tiny bit more than last time.
You know what? I think what it is, we adjusted it, Bruce, so that maybe it's not, the testing isn't so, I'll say, drawn out. It's a little bit more time shortened.
Right.
However, some of the safety measures are just as far as interaction with staff over there. I'm being a little bit more careful because they've loosened up their restrictions. So some of the staff that we will be interacting with over there, instead of being on a 2-week quarantine prior to you all getting there, will not quite be on that same length of quarantine. So I do want everyone to use, you know, as strict a social responsibility as I can institute over there and still make it reasonable for everyone to have, you know, a reasonably good time and enjoy the sport.
Hey, it's a W Hotel. It's a 5-star bubble jail.
Can't be bad.
5-star luxurious bubble jail. That's what it's going to be for me for the next 2.5 weeks or 2 weeks. Doc, I really can't thank you enough, as always, for your intelligence, your instructions, your information, everything. It's a lot to digest. In a few sentences, let me ask you, how did you feel about yesterday in the state of our country?
Oh, boy. Listen, I don't think anyone wants. Here's all I want to see. I always want to see fair elections, and I always want to see a good transition of power. And
right.
To me, we have to respect all those. If we can improve upon things, we're all in the same boat. We want to see anything improve. So if there's a better way to have an election, well, we can do it. We can learn. But there always has to be, that's our constitution. That's the basis of this country. And that's the foundation why we're a great country. There always needs to be a smooth transition of power. If that's not the one line you learn about the presidency every 4 years or every 8 years, you're probably not paying attention to what we all have been brought up on. So,
right.
You know, yeah, it's horrible. I mean, you know, I don't want to see anyone ever be threatened and hurt. That's just not
no.
right.
No, it's a very sad day in our history. Very sad day. I could talk to you a lot more about everything we've talked about. We could be on the meeting here for another hour, but I know you got to go and save people and help people and be the great doctor that you are. I have so much respect for you aside from being my good friend, Dr. Jeff. And thank you so much for being on the show. Just stay safe. Keep up the good work. Stay safe. I feel for all the frontliners that you work with. I can only imagine how exhausted they are. And I hope this calms down, not just for the benefit of the health of all of us as American citizens and in the world itself, but for the benefit of the amazing job that you guys do every day before and after this pandemic hit. You have nothing but respect for me, and I bow to all of you right now.
Much appreciated to both of you. And let me give a quick shout out and say thank you to all the nurses out there, the nurses, all the technicians, all the support staff. You know, a lot of times, the doctors may get some credit, but really, really cannot be done without the great ER nurses, ICU nurses, all the hospital nurses everywhere. So shout out to all them. And thank you guys for having me, Andre. I look forward to our next meeting or our next podcast.
Thanks, Doc. I even get requests from doctors and nurses across the country in the videos I do. They want motivational, like, give us a shot in the arm. So if you ever need any of that for you at the medical center you work at or whatever, you just let me know. And it's anything you want is anything you want. Period.
I much appreciate it.
All right, Doc. Take care. I will see you in Vegas when I get back for the shows come March. All right, February.
All right.
Excuse me.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Doc.
Cheers, my man. Okay. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
There he is, the good Doc. Always learn something new, Bruce.
Always learning something new, and it's just a lot of information to digest. I'm still digesting it. But I'm the one that's got to go now, TJ. So all I can say is that... so much to talk about on the show. I'm very sad about what happened. Let's hope that everything comes together. And let's just look positive, okay? Let's end the show on a positive note. Anything you want to tell the audience before we leave?
No. Extra Rounds, my show on UFC Fight Pass is starting on Monday. Myself and Forrest Griffin are going to look back at some of the stranger things we've seen in mixed martial arts. Obviously, focus heavily on 2020 and the year that was, but we'll go back in the archives and just look at some of the random, weird, strange occurrences that have happened in mixed martial arts fights in the past. And then, obviously, we'll be back normal for Extra Rounds on Wednesdays and Saturdays as we get closer to the return of Conor McGregor. And just hopefully everyone will check it out. We're live on Facebook, but you can always check out the archive on UFC Fight Pass.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, lots to look forward to as far as UFC action and MMA action this month. TJ, Happy New Year, my friend. We have another year to go. Our 12th or 13th year together come May. I forget which one
I stopped counting.
I stopped counting. But at the same time, it's a great way to walk down the pathway of life with you doing our podcast.
It's my pleasure, Bruce. I appreciate every episode that we get to do. We'll hit 500 this year, so I'm excited for
that. I know. I know. It's coming up. All right, TJ, you have a great week. We will do the show from Abu Dhabi next week and the week after while I'm in Abu Dhabi. We'll figure out the times and everything else. And with that being said, everybody, practice your safety and protocol. Be good Americans. Stand up for what is true, what life is all about, and let's always be the best we can be. As you walk down that path of life, be the best you can be so you're a winner. Let's all keep winning. There's so much negativity around us. Let's try to be the best we can be as individuals, to be role models for our sphere of influence so we stay on the right path. Wear your mask, practice your safety and protocol, be aware of everything going on. God bless America. God bless our great country. And God bless you all. Whoever your God is, I hope they bless you. And I mean that very sincerely from the bottom of my heart. Happy New Year, everybody. See you next week from Abu Dhabi. It's time to be the best we can be. Happy 2021. Cheers.
It's Time with Bruce Buffer is a TJ DeSantis production and is property of Buffer Enterprises Incorporated. Its content is intended for private use only.